We are the Forsaken. Forsaken.
You're listening to a Corpse Run Radio minicast.
Littlest Pet Shop for all of your pet battling needs.
Hello, sweeties. You know what time it is. That's right. It's pet collecting time. Yay! And today we are talking about one of my very favorite world events, and that is the Midsummer Fire Festival. Well, this year we've got some new stuff. Squee! Okay, so let's talk about that. First off, we have two new toys and one new pet that has been added. Very excited. Alright, so let's talk about the toys for a moment. Now, first off, there is a Burning Defenders medallion. And with 500 Burning Blossoms, you can get this. So, the Burning Defenders medallion is by Numpickup, and it's a unique toy. Now, on use, you take on the guise of a fiery defender. And this has a 2-hour cooldown, as well as a cozy bonfire. And that will take 350 Burning Blossoms to get. Now, the cozy bonfire is also bind on pickup. Now, when you use this, it places a cozy bonfire that increases the spirits of those nearby by 4 and allows cooking. It has a 30-minute cooldown. Now, don't forget, you can get these from the vendors in both Orgrimmar and Stormwind, and they sell lots of very cool stuff. So, two new toys. But the most exciting thing is the new pet. And the new pet will take 350 Burning Blossoms. And it is the Blazing Cindercrawler. Ooh, very, very excited. So, let's talk about the Blazing Cindercrawler. Now, this is an elemental pet. And when you get it, it will be an uncommon quality. You can have 3 of these in your pet journal. And one of the animations is that it twitches its legs. Okay, so let's have a look at the battle information for this pet. So the slot 1 abilities. At level 1, this pet, it gets burn. Now, this is 100% hit chance. It blasts the enemy with fire, dealing elemental damage. Now, this is good against mechanical and not so good against critters. Then at level 10, you get flamethrower. This is 100% hit chance. It turns the battlefield into a raging inferno, dealing elemental damage. Fire continues to burn the enemy, dealing elemental damage each round for 2 rounds. Now, again, good against mechanical, not so good against critters. The slot 2 abilities. At level 2, you get Brittle Webbing. This is 100% hit chance. It deals beast damage and coats the target in brittle webbing, causing them to take beast damage each time they attack. It lasts 3 rounds. Great against critters and not so good against flying. Then at level 15, you can get Heat Up. This is a 4-round cooldown. It deals elemental damage each time you take direct damage, and it lasts 3 rounds. Great against mechanical, not so good against critters. Now the slot 3 abilities. At level 4, you get Magma Wave. This is 100% hit chance, and it deals elemental damage to the enemy's pets. Destroys objects created by both teams. And again, great against mechanical, not so good against critters. At pet level 20, you get Cauterize, and this restores health plus half of the last hit taken by the user. It has a 3-round cooldown. Okay, the passive modifiers for elemental. Now, remembering elementals ignore all negative weather effects. Enemy pets can still gain the beneficial effects from weather when facing an elemental. Damage taken is 50% up from aquatic abilities and 33% down from mechanical abilities. Anyway, that is all from me today. I hope you have great fun with your pet battles and your pet collecting, and we will talk to you later. Bye!
Thank you, Lita. Yay! New toys and a new pet for this year. Very cool. I'll have to head over to Undercity, my favorite capital city, of course, to begin the quests so that I can get them too. Big thank you also to Anelia on the Warcraft forums for posting information on the Blasted Lands bonfires. She advised that if you're working on the bonfires for free XP or to get the holiday currency, be sure to speak to Zidormi when you get to the Blasted Lands in order to go to the past version of the zone to see the bonfires. Zidormi is on the small hill to the right of the path as you enter the zone from the Swamp of Sorrows. You need to speak to her again when you're done in order to return to the present version as well. Now, this next song is gorgeous and is called Midsummer's Dance by the lovely Musasita. Following that, we have Grand Nagus with some information on the Southern Barrens, and then part 3 of the story of Kael'thas Sunstrider by Noble 87. Happy Midsummer, darlings!
Spinning, 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 around the pole we go, dancing in the light of midsummer's fiery glow. See the burning blossom rising in the sky. Unlike the golden ember, our flames will never die. Singing, 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 our voices fill the air. Dressed in summer vestments with petals in our hair. Receive the fire's blessing, raise your spirits high, and like the courage within us, our flames will never die.
Hello and welcome. Today I'm going to talk about Southern Stranothorn, also called Cape of Stranothorn. The two most noticeable areas in Southern Stranothorn are the Goribashi Arena and the city of Booty Bay. The Goribashi Arena was back in the day the only area where you could do open person-to-person PvP, regardless of your faction. Once you step into the arena, everyone that's in there besides you is hostile. That's because there is a chest there that you can loot every 3 hours that comes up, and the last man standing, so to speak, can loot it. I think it's a 10-second cast to open it, and if you do that once, you get an achievement. If you do it 12 times, you'll get a achievement, like the next step, so to speak, of the achievement. The times when those appear, those chests, are 12 a.m., 3 a.m., 6 and 9 a.m., and then 12, 3, 6 and 9 p.m. as well. So every 3 hours, starting from 12, respectively. This is very challenging to some people. By now, we have the same kind of thing on the Darkmoon Fair Island, where every couple of hours you have a last man standing match. But that's, I think, is time limited, or it's limited to the amount of people that get in to when it starts. This thing here is, I think, it's an open end. So if you continue to run back in, you can take this on. I think it's 1 hour or so that it'll take until the chest eventually despawns. But it's quite a long time, so people can run back in after they were killed and try their luck again. So yeah, if there are enough people, it can be quite a while before a winner is determined. The achievements you get are Goribashi Arena Master and Goribashi Arena Grandmaster. As I said earlier, the first one is for the first kill and the Grandmaster is for doing this 12 times. You get a token each time, and if you turn 12 tokens in, you'll get the achievement for the Grandmaster. As for the zone, Southern Stranothorn itself, let's just go over the thing real quickly. We have 3 flight points. Well, actually we have 4, but we have 3 flight destinations. We have the shared flight point in Booty Bay, although they are at slightly different locations, on the rooftop of the main building in Booty Bay, but it's called Booty Bay in both instances, which is a rarity itself. Then we have the Alliance flight point at Explorers League Deckside, and we have the Horde flight point at Hard Wrench Hideout. We also have a boat route that takes you from Booty Bay to Ratchet in the Northern Barrens. Booty Bay in of itself is a big city, not that big, but there's very much going on. I'm just gonna list a couple of things that you might not know. For one, if you are around level 25, I would say, maybe 26, you can go to Booty Bay to get a mage teleport to Western Plaguelands, to Anderhal, to continue questing there, instead of having to run up there and doing the run through half of the continent. At least for the Alliance, it's very convenient. Not so much for the Horde, since they are pretty much closer to it, being that they are right outside of Undercity and in Heroes Fall Glades anyway, so they're just in the neighborhood. Another thing that Booty Bay has to offer is one of 4 goblin reps, which together make up the Steamwheel Cartel rep faction. The other 3 that are part of the Steamwheel Cartel reps are Ratchet in Northern Barrens, Gatgesan in Tenaris, and Everlock in Winterspring. Those reps are needed to get them to Exalted if you want to do the Insane in the Membrane meta achievement, to get the achievement title, The Insane. Doing that is in of itself not easy, but anyone that has figured out or tried to figure out how to go about it is pretty much gone insane in of itself, because decreasing one rep means you increase another, and you need to be honored and exalted with the respective opposite factions. So that's not very easy to handle. It's not just doing this and doing that very easily. You have to put in quite some thought to balance it all out. While we're at the Insane in the Membrane meta achievement, I'm going to list the required factions just real quickly so you see what you need to do. You need to be honored with the Bloodsail Buccaneers. You need to be exalted with the following factions: Everlock, Ratchet, Ravenhold, Booty Bay, Gadgistan, and Darkmoon Fair. So that's not very easy to do. Not sure if it all has to be at the same time, which would be even more insane. But there are people, I've been told, that have achieved getting exalted, because back in the day you had to be exalted with all these factions, and you didn't have to just be honored with the Bloodsail Buccaneers. No, you had to be exalted with those two. So that was quite a thing back then. And as I said, I've been told that there are people that have achieved exalted rep with all these factions at the same time. How they figured out the math to do that is beyond me. But anyway, we have, in addition to those, we have some more stuff in Booty Bay. We have the opposition to the Bloodsail Buccaneers, which are the Blackwater Raiders. Those help you with the quest line that you do, the primary quest line that you do in Booty Bay. So if you obtained a TCG loot code, you can go to Booty Bay and find Landor Longshot. He is at the beginning of the pier that leads to the boat on the left-hand side. And if you want to turn it in and get this pet activated, you need to speak to him, choose the expansion that you choose the expansion that the code is from, and then you'll get the list of items that you can unlock, which you have to select then and then enter the code. It's as easy as that. You cannot enter the code for a TCG loot card on the Blizzard webpage. You have to go and do it in game at this specific NPC, Landor Longshot. Also, until we had the combined auction houses, we had the neutral auction houses, and those were located in the respective goblin main cities I stated earlier, and Booty Bay is one of those cities. So there is a formerly neutral auction house, and I think it's turned into a normal auction house now. So you have the opportunity to go there to deal with your auctions if you so desire. The big goblin statue in the harbor has been damaged during the cataclysm, and if you complete the quest line in Zul'Gurub in northern Strangathorn, this is where you need to go. The hole in the statue where formerly the left arm was, you fly in there because that's what you need to do. You can not get there by any other means. You need to fly, and then there is the stash of gold in there, and you can get your loot there, just for people that can't find it. Another thing I want to talk about real quickly for those pet battlers: we have the little island down in the south of the zone, Jaguru's Isle. This is where you need to go to find the baby ape. It's only going to spawn there exclusively, and only when it rains. For the pet battlers, pet collectors, pet tamers, however, go there when it rains, find the baby ape. I hope you're lucky, just as lucky as I was, to get the blue one pretty fast. Other than that, this zone is kind of unspectacular, so there isn't much else for me to tell you guys. If you have questions or suggestions for me, tweet me at GrandNegus1, write me an email at towerofcommerce@gmail.com, or write into the show, corpserunradio@gmail.com. This has been Grand Negus, Rule of Acquisition number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye, guys.
Hello everyone! Last week we did the second part of Keelfuss' story, in which we talked about the events of Warcraft 3, from Keelfuss joining the hunt for Illidan, all the way to him switching sides and actually teaming up with Illidan and moving to the planet of Outlands. This week we take a look at the final part of his story, which took place during the Burning Crusade. So let's begin, shall we?
For nearly 7,000 years, the High Elves cultivated a shining magical kingdom, hidden deep within the forests of northern Lordaeron. But 5 years ago, the undead Scourge invaded Quel'Thalas and drove the elves to the brink of extinction. Led by the evil Death Knight Arthas, the Scourge destroyed the mystical Sunwell, thereby severing the elves from the source of their arcane power. Though the scars of that conflict are evident, the remaining elves have banded together and retaken much of their homeland. Calling themselves Blood Elves, these grim survivors are committed to regaining the vast powers they once commanded. Inspired by the leadership of their beloved prince, Kael'thas Sunstrider, the Blood Elves now seek new sources of arcane magic and the means of defending their land against the undying horrors of the Scourge. As one of the few surviving Blood Elves, you must master your thirst for magic and help shape the destiny of your people.
A lot of events of the story happened off-screen before we stepped through the dark portal and got our first look at Outland ourselves. I'll try to do my best to explain it as clear as possible, but just keep in mind that a whole bunch of stuff happens which ties into the overall storyline, and I won't tell it all chronological. Let's begin with Kael'thas and the events in Outland. Kael'thas and his troops claimed the area known as Netherstorm, while Lady Vash made her base within the Zangarmarsh, and Illidan was hanging out in the Black Temple. Netherstorm was known as Farallon before Draenor was blown up and transformed into Outlands. Members of the Alliance of Lordaeron, those that had followed the Horde to stop them after their second invasion, they built a base in this area, which Kael'thas decided to blow up. Archmage Vargov was the leader of the mages in this base, sent by the Kirin Tor, but Kael'thas no longer held any allegiance to the Kirin Tor. A mana bomb was dropped upon Kirinvar village, wiping out nearly all of the troops, but the Archmage survived, was locked away in a tower, waiting for the day that the adventurers would come and save his life. Another mage of the Alliance of Lordaeron was also still trapped on Outland. Khadgar, who had once made a report to Kael'thas and the Council of Six, he was now a powerful mage in his own right. He had fought against the Horde, but he realized that a new evil was closing in all around them from the Twisting Nether. More foul than the Dark Orcs, it was the Burning Legion itself that sought to take hold of this Outland. In response, Khadgar used his magic to search the Great Dark Beyond to find some sort of help, and there he sent beings of immense light. It was Adal and his Naru that he had found, and Khadgar was able to convince Adal and his brethren to come back to Outland with him and join them in their fight against the Legion. The Naru did not show up with empty hands. They came with a fortress known as the Tempest Keep, which allowed them to travel through alternate dimensions from one location to another in the blink of an eye. Adal traveled to Shafraf City, but along the way he met up with Prophet Velen, leader of the Draenei, and Velen made a cryptic prophecy concerning the redemption of a people cursed by blood. Adal and the other Naru realized what was to come, and they left behind the Naru Ma'uru to defend the Tempest Keep as they made their way to the city. There, they teamed up with the Aldor, a faction of Draenei that had stayed behind after the fall of the city, and they had fought against Blood Elves loyal to Kael'thas. Now, with the arrival of the Naru, the Aldor quickly regained their strength, and reconstruction of the city began. Despite it all, and the Naru being against the Legion and Kil'jaeden, the same threats Illidan was trying to hide away from, for some reason, a group of Blood Elves was still sent to attack Adal and the city. Some speculate that this was a setup by Kael'thas to turn Adal and Illidan against each other, that Illidan had never given the order, and that Kael'thas just sent some troops and made it look like Illidan attacked the city. Others say that they didn't know what Adal was trying to do, that they didn't realize that Adal was against the Legion, so they simply wanted to take care of this threat, while another reason could be that Illidan was truly crazy and simply wanted to attack. Either way, regardless of the reason, a group of blood elves led by Vorafal the Seer, they were sent to assault the city. The Aldor's exarchs and vindicators, they lined up to defend the Terrace of Light, but something quite unexpected happened. The blood elves, they laid down their weapons in front of the city's defenders, and Vorafal stormed into the Terrace of Light, demanding to speak to Adal. As the Naru approached him, Vorafal kneeled before him and uttered the following words. I've seen you in a vision, Naru. My race's only hope for survival lies with you. My followers and I are here to serve you. The defection of Vorafal and his followers was the largest loss ever incurred by Kael's forces, and they weren't just any blood elves. These were many of the best and brightest amongst Kael's scholars and magisters, and they'd all been swayed by Vorafal's influence. The Naru accepted the defectors within their city, and they would be known as the Scryers. Now, a beautiful vessel like the Tempest Keep, it was the perfect target, which Kilfas and his elves gladly took over. They assaulted the keep, they captured the Naru Mu'uru, who had stayed behind to try to defend the place, and they took over the facility. Velen and the Draenei realized that the time was now. They stormed a part of the Tempest Keep known as the Exodar, and they were planning to use it to escape Outlands. The Blood Elves, naturally they tried to hold them back, they failed at their mission, but they were able to sabotage the ship. This caused the Exodar to crash land on Azeroth, where the Draenei met with the Night Elves and would eventually join the Alliance. So that's what happened on Outland, but Kael'thas had not forgotten about his people still left on Azeroth. Illidan, he had taught the Blood Elf Prince how to cope with their magical hunger left behind after the destruction of the Sunwell. They learned how they could drain magical energies out of objects, but also out of magical beings, from arcane worms to even demons. Most of the Blood Elves that joined Kael'thas to Outlands, they were invigorated by this new method, and they decided to stay on the planet to further their studies. Grand Magister Romaf was sent back home to pass on Illidan's teachings, but not all of the Blood Elves were inclined to start sucking the magical life out of things and out of beings. Regent Lord Lorfamar Faran was placed in charge by Kael'thas to rule in his absence, and Lorfamar saw no other choice than to banish those that refused to embrace this new way of life. He couldn't rule a kingdom divided, so those that refused to drain the magical essence out of beings, they were banished, while the rest of their people started to heal. They used this new way of life, this newfound power, to fight back against the undead, and they reclaimed their city. It seemed like Kael'thas had given them what he had promised, but draining magic, and especially fel magic, comes with side effects. As we've seen with the orcs, their skin turned green when they came in touch with fel magic, and even those that did not use fel magic themselves, they were still affected by it. For the Blood Elves, it wasn't their skin color that changed, instead their eyes turned from blue to green. You might think that this is a minor side effect, and honestly it is, but you need to understand that fel magic is like crack. It's addictive, it corrupts. Some went so far in their addiction for magic that they overindulge themselves and turn themselves into beings known as wretched, but the Blood Elves, they're a pragmatic race, and they accepted the consequences.
There are other founts of power in this world, Kael. Demons, for instance.
You speak of madness, my lady. Will never be that desperate.
As the Draenei joined the Alliance, Lorfamar and the Blood Elves were also working towards joining the Alliance by rebuilding their bond with an ambassador from the Alliance, but it turned out that this ambassador was a spy. He, together with several sentinels, they were working on sabotaging the Blood Elves' Arcane Sanctums, but luckily they were exposed and the ambassador was executed. This meant that an alliance with the Alliance was off the table, but not all hope was lost. The former High Elf, Sylvanas Windrunner, now Banshee Queen of the Forsaken, she offered her aid. She helped the Blood Elves with reinforcements against the Scourge, and she made arrangements for Lorfamar and the Blood Elves to join the Horde.
The Blood Elves will endure any hardship, overcome any obstacle, and emerge stronger than before.
So at this point, Kael'thas had sent instructions on how to drain magic, but he had another gift for his people. The captured Naru Mu'uru was sent to Silvermoon, where the Blood Elf drained it of its holy light. Lady Liadrin, once devoted to the light, she'd lost her faith as the Scourge destroyed her world. She could not believe in a power that would forsake them in their hour of need, but with the arrival of Mu'uru, new opportunities presented themselves. This source of light would require no faith or devotion. It was taken and forced to bend to their will. Liadrin stepped up and took these powers, and she became the first of the Blood Knights, the first of the Blood Elf Paladins. Most of the population were not okay with what they were doing, draining such a holy being of his light that was simply not okay, and at first they scorned Liadrin and those that had chosen to follow her path. Over time, though, the Blood Knights, they gained more influence within their society, yet a devastating blow was waiting upon the horizon. As the Dark Portal opened up with the Burning Crusade expansion, Blood Elves stepped through to the so-called Promised Land to follow their beloved prince, but things did not go as expected. Which finally brings us to the events of the Burning Crusade. During that expansion, we got our first look at the Planet of Outland, and the story that I just told you is scattered in pieces and told by different characters. Now in Netherstorm, we found out that Kil'fas had been draining magical energies, but he also decided to change his allegiance from Illidan to Kil'jaeden. According to Magister Felendorn, Kil'fas knew about Illidan's insanity, which came upon him as he was defeated by Arthas at Icecrown. And since Illidan was now insane, he switched paymasters accordingly. Teaming up with Illidan was bad enough, but playing for Team Burning Legion was a step too far, and plans were made to stop the Blood Elf Prince, so he attacked different parts of the Tempest Keep. The Mechanar was turned into a factory to create large amounts of power which they stored away in mana cells. The Botanica was used to investigate the Naro technology, experiment with it, and they experimented on the flora found in Outland. Here they worked on creating and manipulating life, and they were trying to figure out how to use this power to benefit their people. The Arcatraz was a prison of the Naro, where they kept the most terrifying and dangerous creatures they encountered on their journeys. Kil'fas had his people guard the place, of course, but they were quickly corrupted by the inmates, and we assaulted all these different areas, and we cleared it out. Then there was the Eye, the final part of the Tempest Keep, in which Kil'fas himself resided. Entering this area was not so easy, it would require a key to get in, and this key was in the possession of Adal himself. Now you might imagine that the Naro would be very happy for people to reclaim the Tempest Keep, but the Naro didn't really care about Kil'fas taking over their vessel. They didn't see the necessity of taking it back, but that all changed once we found out that Kil'fas held the Cipher of Damnation. The Cipher of Damnation held the words once used by Gul'dan to raise the massive volcano that you can see in Shadow Moon Valley, and the spell severed the final ties the orcs held with the elements. This spell could cause devastation, so after proving our worth to Adal, he grants us the key, and we're allowed to go into the keep and take care of business. Now Kil'fas' allegiance to the Legion and his command over the Cipher of Damnation, they were not the only reasons that we went into the Tempest Keep. The Broken Draenei Akama had realized that teaming up with Illidan had done him no good, and together with the Warder Maiev, they made plans to assault the Black Temple and take out the Betrayer. Unfortunately, Seer Olam, one of their allies, he was captured by the Naga, and they were torturing him in order to get information. He didn't tell them a thing about their plans, but he knew that Illidan, if he got his hands on him, he would rip the secrets from his flesh, so Olam knew that there was only one way to keep their secrets safe. He asked Akama to take his life, and with the deed done, Illidan showed up, and Akama quickly came up with a new plan.
Master, we have found the traitor who escaped Varsh. His body lies in front of me, lifeless.
You disappoint me, Akama. I wanted to question the treacherous worm myself. I'm beginning to question your allegiance, Broken.
But, sire, you have misjudged my actions. I do have knowledge of someone close to you who plans to betray you. It is that dog, Kil'thas. He has aligned with Kil'jaeden and intends to replace you as Lord of Outland.
I do not sense lies in your voice, Akama. That Kil'thas would betray me does not come as a big surprise. I'm not as oblivious as some would think. That one of your own was involved with him puts your loyalties into question. Send your Ash Tongue into Tempest Keep and slay his most prized possession, the phoenix known as Alhar. I must know that you are not on his side. Do not think of betraying me, Broken. We both know who owns your soul.
It will be done, my lord.
Akama placed Kil'fas and Illidan against each other, and were sent in to kill the phoenix Alar. A few of you asked me if I could give you some backstory about Alar, but not much is known. Wikipedia says the following. Phoenixes are powerful avian creatures summoned from the elemental plane. During the Third War, the phoenix was the most powerful spell a blood mage could cast. The idea of a creature rising from its own ashes also symbolizes the blood elves who rose from the ashes of the slaughtered high elves. Thus, the phoenix serves as an essential symbol of the Blood Elf race found their flags, banners, tabards, and racial crests. Powerful blood mages, like Kilfas, they can summon phoenixes, and the phoenix god is Alar, Kil's beloved pet. So that's a little bit of a backstory behind Alar. Now, besides Alar, we also faced a Void Reaver and Solarian, but neither really have much of a backstory. Now, with these two defeated, it was time to face off against the Blood Elf Prince, but Kilfas didn't come alone. With him were his four advisors.
Energy. Power. My people are addicted to it. A dependence made manifest after the Sunwell was destroyed. Welcome to the future. A pity you're too late to stop it. No one can stop me now. Salama Ashalanore.
Veladret the Darkener, Lord Sanguinar, Capernaum, and Moss the Engineer Telonicus, they were Kilfas' advisors, but again, they don't have much of a backstory. Some speculate that Lord Sanguinar is a relative of Valera Sanguinar, but the only confirmed connection that I could find is having the same last name, so it's uncertain if they're from the same family, or if they even knew each other. Now, after taking out the advisors, the weapons that they used, all four advisors at the same time, we finally face off against Kilfas himself. With the legendary weapons in hand dropped by his advisors, whole raids tried to bring down the Blood Elf Prince, who used mind control, who summoned phoenixes, and did all kinds of magical spells in an attempt to wipe out raids. Eventually, Kilfas had enough. He called upon the powers they collected with a netherstorm, and this increased his size, powers, and abilities. Not even that was enough to stand up against the heroes, and Kilfas was eventually defeated, and we brought back one of his verdant spheres as proof of demise. As you turn in one of these spheres, silence descends upon Shafroth, and Adal's thoughts invade your mind. Kilfas' Sunstride has been defeated, and the time to strike at the remaining Blood Elves in Tempest Keep is now. Take heart, and let Adal's song of battle empower you. Yet, Kilfas wasn't done yet. He appears in front of Adal and says, "Your monkeys failed to finish the job, Naru. Beaten, but alive. The same mistake was not made when we took command of your vessel. All for what? Trinkets? You are too late. The preparations have already begun. Soon the master will make his return. And there is nothing you or that fool Illidan can do to stop me. You have both served me in your own right, unwittingly. Lay down your arms and succumb to the might of Kil'jaeden."
Illidan's agenda was short-sighted. I grew impatient. In secret, I began harvesting what energies I could. I had a brief taste of true power. All is not lost. The Sunwell's essence endured, kept hidden by those who sought to protect it. Now, I have returned with the knowledge that sacrifices must be made before we can reclaim our birthright. I have forged a new alliance. Soon, the blessed rays of the Sunwell will shine once again and usher into this world the one who will deliver us all.
Tempest Keep was merely a setback, as Kilfas was brought back to health by Priest Delrisa, who stuck a gem in his chest and made him good to go. He did change quite a bit. Obviously, he lost one of his spheres, and since a lot of fell magic was used to bring him back to health, he now looked sickly pale and not really good, in my opinion. Now, the next step in their plans was to bring their master Kil'jaeden into the world of Azeroth, and for this, they plan to use the remaining powers of the Sunwell and create a massive portal. As I mentioned in part 1 of this storyline, blowing up the Sunwell did not destroy all of its power. Some of it remained, and the Red Dragon Koryalstras, he hid it away by transforming the powers into a living girl with fake memories and a fake family. This girl and Vina Teague would eventually meet with the Blue Dragon Caligos, and together they took out the betrayer of the High Elves, Darkon. Andrafir. Dark Andrafir, who wanted to claim the remaining powers of the Sun Well, but it was eventually defeated. After these events, the Blood Elves, like Lorfamar, they promised to keep Envina a secret to the world, but apparently somebody told Kilfuss, and they did not expect their prince to turn on them. He had Envina captured, and was planning to use her to power the portal, and on top of that, Kilfuss also decided to attack his own people and steal back the Narum Uru. Leia Liadrin of the Blood Knights, she saw this attack with her own eyes, and she decided to travel to Shavra City and talk with Adal. In this conversation, Adal explained to Liadrin that events took place just as they were supposed to happen, and that M'Uru had already accepted his fate. The prophecy spoken by Velen had come true, the prophecy that said, "Silvery moon washed in blood, led astray into the night, armed with sword of broken light. Broken, then betrayed by one, standing there bestride the sun. At darkest hour, redemption comes, in knightly lady, sworn to blood." Liadrin realized that Kilfuss was a false prince, and she renounced her loyalties to the House Sunstrider and decided to join Adal and the Shattered Sun Offensive in their battle against Kilfuss and Kil'jaeden. "Together, we assaulted the Isle of Quel'Danas, unlocked it piece by piece, and within the Magister's Terrace, we found Kilfuss again."
"Don't look so smug. I know what you're thinking. But Tempest Keep was merely a setback. Did you honestly believe I would trust the future to some blind, half-night elf mongrel?" "Oh, no, no, no. He was merely an instrument. A stepping stone to a much larger plan. It has all led to this. And this time, you will not interfere."
"My demise accomplishes nothing! The Master will have you! You will drown in your own blood! The world shall burn!"
Plans were already in motion, and Kilfuss believed that we would be unable to stop Kil'jaeden and the Legion, but of course, he was wrong. The invasion was prevented, and as a bonus, the core of the Narum M'Uru, M'Uru who we had taken out in the Sunwell itself, it was used by Velen to reignite the Sunwell. This gave the Blood Elves their source of power back that they were so desperately searching for, and this time the magic was pure and even had a touch of the Holy Light. Kilfuss had fallen to the dark side, but in a strange, crooked way, his action still led to a path of redemption and allowed his people to find their source of power.
"Blessed ancestors! I feel it! So much love! So much grace! There are no words! Impossible to describe!"
"Salvation, young one. It waits for us all. Farewell."
And that's the story of Kilfuss Sunstrider. That's the legacy of the Blood Elf Prince. Lorfamar Faran would go on leading their people, and the Blood Elves would keep on fighting for their place in this world. I want to take the end of this video to talk about a few things that I haven't covered in the story just yet, but keep in mind that some of this is purely my opinion, and some of it is pure speculation. Let's first talk about what Kilfuss and the rest of them were actually trying to do in Outland, since that's still not entirely clear. Let's first face the fact that being part of the lore during the Burning Crusade was not the best thing to happen, since there are a lot of plot holes, a lot of developed story that was changed simply to turn them into bosses, and a lot of events that were never shown and only told in pieces. Many theories float around as to what exactly they were trying to do, and I personally like the theory of creating a gigantic new Well of Eternity. Remember the Lady Vash, she was taking control of the waters in the Zangarmarsh, while Kilfuss was collecting vast amounts of energy within the Nether Storm. Lady Vash and Kilfuss still held a vial filled with water from the original Well of Eternity, so they could have combined Illidan's knowledge with their power collected, with their water collected, it, and they could have gone for a big fountain of power. This would also clear up the confusion as to why Kilfuss didn't simply use his vial to create a new Sunwell, similar to how his ancestors had done it in the past. He was holding it out for the big master plan, for the big source of power, but eventually he saw that Illidan was crazy, and he decided to team up with Kil'jaeden. Now, during the Warlock Dreamfire questline, we found another mysterious thing, which is that Illidan had already created a big fountain of power within the Black Temple. They speculated that this might be the answer Illidan had promised to Kilvas, but for some reason, Illidan never delivered. Was it truly insanity that made him do this, or was he actually smart enough to realize that keeping Kilvas dependent on him would assure his loyalty? Who knows what Illidan was thinking, who knows why he refused to give up this fountain of power, but that's how it all went down. We took out the so-called bad guys in Outland, we saved the day, yet some still wonder if Kilvas truly was a bad guy. In my opinion, like I mentioned earlier, Burning Crusade was not the best moment in WoW's lore, and some characters were turned into bad guys simply for the sake of being a bad guy. It's up to you to decide what Kilvas was, but I think Lorfamar described the road taken by Kilvas beautifully in his short story, In the Shadows of the Sun. In that story, Lorfamar was dealing with being forced to aid Sylvanas in the war against the Lich King, as the Blood Elves were still struggling to recover, but he had no choice. He was forced to deliver aid, or Sylvanas would pull back her forsaken troops and leave the Blood Elves to their fate. I deal with the devil indeed, but the Sunwell may never have been restored had we not sunk to those levels. Here I find myself so close to believing that the ends justify the means, but the ruins of the Magister's Terrors will haunt me forever, reminding me of the fate I tempt with that fought. This is the line I walk, finally knowing that the actions I take in necessity are nonetheless indefensible. Those truths can never be reconciled, but sometimes I can hold them both side by side and almost understand. I might call this revelation profound if I were ignorant enough not to realize that I'm only learning what Kilvas and Ennistaring before him had also learned in their turns. All we can do is walk the road we are given with such dignity as we can muster, each to our own glory or demise, and pray that there yet remains something of our own hearts when all is said and done. By the Sunwell, I hope that there will remain something of mine. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the end of Kilvas' story, since, once again, I've been going on for long enough. It was quite a big project to tell it all, but I also had a lot of fun researching the Blood Elves' history, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. Tomorrow, just a heads up, I'll probably upload the 3 parts into one video, as I always do, so I can easily share it and link it around on the internet. Just a heads up, tomorrow will probably be the full version. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. I really hope you enjoyed it. Subscribe if you like my videos, and until next time, guys. See ya!
My people lost everything. Their light was extinguished, replaced by a hunger for magic and vengeance. We became the Blood Elves. Now I will fight for my homeland. Lama Ashalanore.